Hello and welcome to the Ham Radio Crash Course Podcast, the podcast that follows the YouTube Ham Radio Crash Course. We're back again to talk about ham radio, so let's get started. Well, hello again, Leia. Thank you for joining me in our wonderfully appointed studio. Today we have a box of Jell-O Play Jell-O kit that we enjoyed
this
evening.
Pudding.
Wonderful location that we have once again.
Yes.
And thank you for joining me. How are you doing?
The most professional of locations.
That's right.
good, actually. It turns out that all of the neighborhood kids come out of their homes at 6:30 in the evening, and they just basically have socially distanced playtime. It's like a daily play date.
It's very nice. Good to get the kids outside.
Yes.
Get a little exercise.
Yep.
Very good. We live in a closed-ish off neighborhood, so it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, it's a cul-de-sac.
And there's not many cars coming in and out. So nice and safe. Kind of reminds me like when I was growing up, lots of kids in the neighborhood.
Oh, you also grew up on a cul-de-sac.
I did. Yes, I did.
That end of the cul-de-sac, there's like a melted area of asphalt from your 4th of July celebrations.
That's right. We could literally burn down the asphalt.
Right.
Melted it.
But the city really appreciated
it. Oh, they loved it. Yeah, they loved it.
I really don't even know how you got away with doing that, given that there was that planning commissioner that lived next door to you, and he was kind of a salty old dude. He is actually who I picture when I envision a salty OM. Mm-hmm. It looks like your old neighbor in my
Dell.
Head. Yeah.
An old neighbor, Dell.
Was he a ham?
No.
Oh, no. Because an antenna would not be acceptable.
Not be acceptable. No,
no, absolutely not.
Well, every week we try to come out here and talk a little bit about ham radio. I drag my wife along for the fun.
A little bit about ham radio.
A little bit.
Much to many people's dismay.
A little bit.
Probably not enough.
But this week was fantastic. We got a lot of reviews over on the iTunes. And again, thank you everybody for doing that. We super appreciate the reviews. And I'm just going to jump right in to a bunch of them.
Right, because our show format is...
That's right. That's right. So we got Prep Talk from Me says...
You left a review...
That's right.
I don't think that's allowed.
Says, heard you on Fieldcraft Survival. Love the in-depth analysis between survival and comms. You and Mike had great views and inspired me to get my license. Thanks for all the information you put out there. And that's from Scott.
Oh, yeah. Mike at Fieldcraft Survival.
Super cool dude. Real smart.
He is...
Walks the walk.
Right.
No
he
question.
Is really intense. I get why he has such a massive following.
Mm-hmm.
Because... when you describe that whole thing of like a guy that all guys want to be.
Oh, yeah.
That is Mike.
That is
like
Mike.
That he is probably in the Air Force, a Navy SEAL, and every other.
No, he was Special Forces. He was Green Beret.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he's very cool, though. Intense, but like humble. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Super easy to talk to. Very cool guy. So again, thanks, Mike, for coming out. And he's Fieldcraft Survival. He has his own podcast, multiple different creator-type things on the internet.
He was on the Ham Radio Crash Course live stream, too.
I think that's what he was referring to, is that interview I did with him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought he came from Fieldcraft's podcast.
Maybe. Might have. So, Scott, or me, thank you, me, for the comment. Appreciate that. Amazingness says Lou1138. Great podcast. Great job, guys, from KN6 Art. ART. So very good. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
KN6 ART. Great for all ham levels from Eddie. Says, as a beginner, it's an easy and enjoyable listen that also contains info for more advanced listeners.
Oh.
See, I like that.
Yeah.
That hits me right in the feels. That's exactly what I try to do in all the things.
I think that's a very a hard thing that you struggle with too, because you want to make it accessible.
Yeah, it's hard. It really is hard.
Right. I mean, in your perfect world, like every household would have a ham license.
Right. And in my perfect world, everybody understands all the acronyms that I'm about to drop without me having to explain them. But I know that world doesn't exist.
But you also don't want to alienate the people who have been following a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because your community has grown with you,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from people becoming licensed as a tech, from your original Ham Radio Crash Course tech exam series.
Yep.
And a lot of them have become extras.
I know.
So
active on HF, they're out there like killing it. So it's super humbling to see how far like people have come with it, just super, super awesome. So let's see. One of my favorites from Dr. Zip.
Oh.
The antenna episode where Josh gets his new step iron antenna set up just in time for field day. The discussion that follows is just classic. I think the high point is when Josh is trying to schmooze Leia into thinking the new antenna has a high-tech appearance.
It does.
I wish I could think that fast. Thanks, you guys.
In defense of the step IR, despite the fact that it makes our house look like a helicopter.
Multiple people have said that it looks like our house is going to take off because it is the size of the roof.
It is a much better looking antenna than the hex beam, which, hey, if anybody's interested, still for sale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's on our Ham Radio Crash Course Buy, Sell, Trade Facebook group.
Yes.
Which is a ton of people are posting stuff there. So
yeah. So if you want a hex beam, get this out of my house.
Yep. Local pickup is the only way, really. It's just too damn big to ship. So, and I mean that in the sense that it's not built. It's taken down into parts. It's not hard to move. But, you know, you get the idea. Anyway, hop over to the Buy, Sell, Trade and check that out. A welcome change from the usual Ham Radio podcast by Solske. Soske? It's not Soske. It's Soleske. Solesk? Anyway. I'm sorry I'm butchering your name. Josh and Leia could banter about anything, and it would likely be an enjoyable show. Well, that's awesome.
Wow.
Stay tuned for our next show. Iron Chef reporting.
HRCC, ICC.
ICC, that's right. Where we only talk about the original Iron Chef.
We do a riff track.
A riff track. Yeah. Fukusan. That this show just so happens to be about amateur radio is all the better. I'm moving homes currently, renovating the old ones, so my operating is severely limited and enjoy living vicariously through their light yet technical ham chat. Thank you very much. My wife and three kids have heard parts of the show while I've been working with it on. My sons especially have locked into the tech test reviews. My older son, Luke, N7LPX, can likely attribute to the podcast some of his passing the tech exam at age 12.
A 12-year-old is so much smarter than me. And congratulations to son Luke, because that's amazing.
I really like the recent addition of Leia's practical take on the utility of ham radio. She doesn't get lost in the weeds like so many of us tech folk do. That's very true. I hope she publishes a book or video series marketed to wives whose husbands hope they'll get their tech license. I'd be an early purchaser.
We do have a book idea.
We do. I'm exchanging 1/4 acre in an HOA for 14 acres in the country, by the way.
Wow.
The only crop I'm sure will be growing on the farm is antennas. Very nicely said.
Wow, 14 acres.
What does that even look like? What does a 1/4 acre look like?
Yeah.
73 is from Chris, N7PX. Well, thank you, Chris. That was very, very nice. So, very good. Thank you. Informative and entertaining says, da IDE Gleam. Josh is very knowledgeable and shared his experience in an easy-to-understand manner, although I think he's way off describing his station as very modest. Dude, you have the newest rigs, a step IR, and an amplifier. That's far
this
from
is
modest.
What I'm saying. Thank you.
I have a 7300.
This is not modest. Okay, there is no hobby I have taken on that I have ever spent as much money as you have. That's like I like long for the days when you were still into fishing.
Fishing is cheaper.
That's yes.
True. Yeah. I enjoy when your wife appears on an episode with you and like her positive, upbeat energy. But I do wish she wouldn't interrupt you almost every time you start a sentence. Altogether, though, it's a pretty good podcast. But that was still 5 stars.
Oh, so, that's so nice.
Thank you for the IDE Gleam. I didn't realize you interrupt me. I don't think you do.
Oh, that's such a nice thing to say, because I was going to say, I bet you wish I would stop interrupting you in normal life, too.
Can we just apply that comment to the whole thing? You just spread it out, just butter it across the whole bread that is our lives.
You and I are both big talkers, so we sometimes need to talk over each other.
Yes.
To get one to pause for a second.
Linda, listen. Linda.
But I will try to not. And actually, I was, we were recording the last podcast.
I feel like I talk a lot. And then when you do it, I just let you talk, because I feel like sometimes I talk more than you.
Well, sure, because you're explaining things.
Yeah.
But I remember recording that last podcast and thinking, oh man, I definitely interrupted you. And at one point you actually got annoyed. And I was like, oh, I should.
He's going to kick me off the podcast. HRCC is awesome by Sun. This is a great podcast with lots of information and entertainment. I like the casual conversation and knowledge. Lots of fun to listen to while traveling or just relaxing at home. Thanks for all the hard work you guys do. Thank you, Sun. Oh, geez, I'm an idiot. It's not Sun. That's the day he posted it. Because it stopped being the date at some point and became the week that we are in now. So I'm an idiot. That was from Traveler 7282. I thought it was a Korean guy.
What? How could you do that?
I killed her. I did it.
What is the nice reviewer's name, please?
Traveler 7282.
Thank you, Traveler. Thank you, Traveler. Not Sun.
AKA Sun. I really like it when I say something that crackly up really hard. There's a couple of things, and I try to remember them every once in a while.
Oh my God.
That just kill her. It's so fun. Oh, no,
that's,
I know what it is.
That's just such a dumb mistake.
I know what it is. I won't mention it on the podcast, but oh my God, every time I mention it, she laughs so hard.
Oh, yeah, don't do that one. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I've told you, don't ever say that in front of anybody else ever. Okay, let's move on.
Awesome podcast content and community. This is from Sergio in Florida. Oh,
this is from two.
This is from two. Wed. I stumbled across this podcast after Josh's interview with Mike Glover, Fieldcraft Survival. Mike was the reason I started looking into radios as a means for tactical communication. And though I was aware of the benefits and applications of radio could provide, I didn't know what to do next. I am not very tech savvy, and HRCC has really helped me get started making QSOs. The video reviews, hilarious podcast, and Discord channel provide a way for me to connect with other hams seeking to take their skills and gear to the next level. Thank you for making content that appeals to a younger audience and helping preserve and grow the hobby and skill of amateur radio for the next generation. 73. Very nice.
Wow.
Fantastic. What a great
review. That is a glowing review.
Those were some hot bangers.
Now I've got some hate mail.
I'm just kidding. Well, speaking of our next segment, it's Leia's Corner, where she talks about the email that she's received since our last podcast, which was a week ago.
Yes.
And if you want to email Leia, it's leia@hamtactical.com, which is also the home of our merch store that Leia curates, makes all the content for.
Yes. So, well, actually, I mean, we do take...
You design the,
the
content.
And really, we want it to be like the ham store for people who want cool ham gear, right? Yeah. So we take suggestions on shirts. Mm-hmm. If there's a shirt you've always been like, oh, I wish I had a shirt to identify my hamness. Out in the wild. Do you guys use the term in the wild?
I want a shirt that explains my social awkwardness inside to the outside.
I don't even think that's true. I think that's like an old stereotype about hams.
It is. It totally is. Particularly, because, with, I mean, it's kind of everywhere now.
I talk to people on the Discord, yeah, and everybody is really personable.
Yeah, of course.
Hilarious and witty. I mean,
that's just selling the Discord. Link's in the description, by the way, to join our Discord. Yeah. Free to join. Great community of hams. It's live. It's on 24/7, basically.
Yeah.
People chatting. I can't be everywhere.
Yeah.
The Discord exists because I was getting inundated with questions. Like, no way I could answer all the questions, yeah, I was getting. So the Facebook group and the Discord spawned out of that. And the Discord has been fantastic. We just passed 10,000 members.
Yeah, that's a lot of knowledge on one server.
On Discord, that puts us, like, up there.
What is
on
up
Discord
there?
On Discord terms.
Like,
we qualify for all kinds of crazy stuff now. We're not really doing any of that stuff because we're not like Twitch streamers, really. Yeah. You know, it's not like a gaming channel thing.
Right, right.
But it's pretty cool. It's pretty wild that ham radio has that draw for people. Very, yeah, very cool.
Well, Wired did do that article on how there's a resurgence in ham radio as, mm-hmm, a hobby, that a, mm-hmm, lot of more young people are getting into it.
Mm-hmm.
Really, as a result of the pandemic,
yeah,
it was a reality, for sure, check that, yeah, there is something outside of your control that can impact life as you know it.
That's right.
You know, so, yeah, it was a really good article, actually. I shared it on the Ham Tactical Facebook page. I try to share ham news over there. Okay, so let's get to
your emails.
Emails. Okay.
I need like a jingle.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah.
So Cass Fitzgerald has a shirt recommendation and a comment about the podcast. His shirt recommendation is very funny, and I wanted to run it by you.
Okay, here we go.
Because I'm just going to go. long ago, my girlfriend told me she would wear a shirt if it said "Save the Dadas," perhaps with a picture of an Army J-38 Morse key under it. Although it might be a little bit too racy, because he doesn't think he could wear a shirt like that without looking like a creepy old man. Dadas. Get it?
Save the, like, dadas?
Like the, let's say,
oh,
the
da-da.
Yeah, but it's da-da's. And it would, yes.
I gotta that, we got to think about that.
On one. Your face, I already know that is not approved.
We got to think about that one. Yeah, I mean, one of my big things is to not alienate anybody.
Yes.
I just don't think we need to do that. I think it's funny.
It is hilarious.
The shirt's funny.
Yeah.
It's nicely done. But I just, you know, I don't want anybody to be put off by seeing something.
Well, you don't want to alienate women because you actually want, yeah, women to join the hobby.
Right. But he did say his girlfriend would wear it, so I don't know.
I'm just going to go on.
Oh, okay.
I like your podcast and enjoy listening to a layperson's perspective on ham radio. Yes, it is all made up. I have forgotten about some of the bizarre questions in the pool. That hamstudy.org has the read the questions option, which shows the questions like flashcards. The upper corner of the flashcard has an option to flip over with an explanation of the answer. I found that helpful when I was studying for my extra. And then another shirt idea, 6 dB to the S unit.
Cool.
You're going to have to really delve into this off of the podcast with me so, mm-hmm, I can visualize what that is supposed to look like.
Okay.
That's from Cass N3FLO.
I do like that 6 dB one, though. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
Meaning 6 dB gets you 1S unit.
I got a T-shirt.
Gain.
Yeah, I understand.
Gain.
I know what S units are now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Well, yeah, because you did operated the radio.
Operating it helped really understand it. Well, so bizarre.
Yeah.
Okay. Laura Robertson sent a shirt idea that's really cool, but it's all visual, so I can't show you that.
Well, thank you.
Robert Shank says, I can't believe you don't have a ham radio widow shirt for wives or significant others yet.
Jeez. That's kind of dark.
Well, it's like football widows. Because on Sundays,
I see, I see.
Oh, you went to the ham radio obituary place.
Yeah, I was like, what? He died? He's a silent key? That's what they refer
That's
to.
That's what they're called.
When a ham dies, they're referred to
That's
as silent
so poetic.
Keys. Silent keys. An SL. And they actually use that in Morse code. SL. Silent key.
It's interesting, though, that the concept of ham radio widow exists. I guess for us, your ham shack is like in the house.
Right.
So if I needed you for something.
Yeah. No, I get it, though, because some people have shacks where they like go.
Right. Totally isolated.
Right. The dream.
Your dream.
The dream.
like the she shed.
I don't even know what that is.
It's people who build
is that
like
the opposite
a shed.
Of a man cave? The,
it's yes, a she it's shed? A she shed.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Exactly. Okay. Morse trivia to possibly chump your husband, maybe, is the title.
Chump?
Yes.
Oh my God.
This is.
If it's history stuff, he's going to chump me, if you will.
These acronyms are about to be explained. Uh-huh. You said before the podcast, it was all made up. They okay. just randomly assign. Not true.
Oh, I thought it.
You're okay. about to. Everybody's about to get super schooled on
all right.
this.
All right.
On just not a random assortment of so letters. Excited. I'm so excited.
Josh didn't know something.
Thank you, Jim, for giving me some information Josh did not know.
All right. Okay. Here we go.
Leia, SOS was adopted in 1906 because it has an easy to recognize pattern. Three dits. Three da's and three more dits.
Yes.
However, back when people weren't watching their mouths and saying how the Titanic was unsinkable SOS while the official distress code wasn't all in adopted.
Yeah, SOS didn't exist at that time.
Some Brits were still using CQD for come quick distress. This CQD has not ditty or pattern to it. On April 15th, 1912, RMS Titanic radio operator Jack Phillips initially sent CQD, which was commonly used by British ships. Harold Bride, the junior radio operator, suggested using SOS, saying half-jokingly that it might be his last chance to use the new code. Phillips thereafter began to alternate between the two. Although Bride survived, Phillips perished in the sinking.
Yeah. So that, okay. So I did know that, by the way.
Ugh.
That was
fine. known. I mean, you know it now
no.
that Jim has told me so I could tell you.
There was, so I, over a year ago, I wanted the family to sit down and listen to the actual recordings of the Morse code from the Titanic. And it had like voiceovers for the.
Are you also the kind of person who wants to listen to the last phone calls from the Twin Towers?
No, no,
this is so
no,
depressing. Why would you want the kids to sit down and listen?
Fascinating, because it's like the whole day. It's like an excerpt of like all the transmissions. It's really fascinating.
So engaging for children.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know. But yeah, so it was CQD was the disaster.
I would watch that with you on a date night.
Oh my God.
Please don't make the children watch a sinking ship. They'll never.
I will go on a date with you if you save the spare the children. Spare the children.
Could you imagine? They've never been on a cruise ship and you've shown them the Titanic. I want to one day be able to cruise again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kids, we're going on a cruise. Yay. What is it? Titanic 2.
No. So Photon Jim also sent one about CQ. I tried the Coast Guard for 20 years to see if I'd like it. They described a comm nav job that sounded interesting at recruiting, but then went and made me air crew on a fixed wing aircraft and reorganized and renamed that job twice.
Whoa.
I'm so sorry, Jim.
You went in to do ship stuff. And you're like, here's a thing that's supposed to not be on the ground.
Right.
Or in the water.
On occasion, I'd hear or transmit the safety broadcast notice to all mariners, an official warning. It starts out securite. I'm not sure if that's a... Oh, securite.
Okay.
In French. Three times, giving the mariners a chance to put down their tools or task or whatever and come listen to the warning. This French word is the genesis of CQ.
Oh.
Yes.
I didn't know the history of it, but it generally means seeking all calls from anywhere.
Then there's wiki links that I'm not going to go to, but that kind of explains
the... Fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, and that's from Jim WZ7W.
Very good. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you so much, Jim. Oh, facts. Nicholas writes, says, not sure if this is a good idea. I'm a huge Ghostbusters fan. What about a shirt of a soda hiker backpacker going up a summit saying, who you gonna call? Or something along those lines. That's interesting.
Who are you gonna call? CQ? Let's think about it. We'll workshop that.
Yes.
Not
yes.
a bad idea, though.
From Nick Mitz 716. Okay. And then...
Thank you, Nick.
Yes, thank you, Nick. Steve Owens says, great job with the site and the shirts. He owns two and will likely buy more. That is so nice.
Whoa, thank you.
There is no higher compliment to the designs than when somebody wears them happily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that is the benchmark, I believe.
I figure since the grumpy old gatekeepers like to call us hams with little electronics knowledge and low ability to code appliance operators, we could have our own United Appliance Operators of America Local 231 shirts. Most shirts have the locals' town on them, so perhaps Cerritos, California would be appropriate. It might be better just to use wherever ham radio originated,
oh
I guess.
Oh my gosh, that's such a good idea. Like a union shirt, but it says like local yes. appliance operators?
Yes.
Oh my
okay,
gosh.
I guess that's the shirt that's getting made,
that is
Steve.
So good.
And when it's getting made, you're getting one. Thank
we
you.
We got the 231 though.
Okay, we'll figure that out. The other one is he wants me to make a Grab Yesu go in a wood shirt since we have the G90 and the Fang already.
So it'd be like 817. 817, grab 817, go in the woods.
Sounds
it's another
good.
Radio with a faceplate, kind of like the G90.
Oh, it took me a while to get the G90 right. I want everybody to
it
know
it looks
this.
Really good though. It
like the positions are yeah, at the button no, positions. It's clearly a G90.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And that's from Steve
KF5TJD. Oh, that's so smart.
You're so excited.
That's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Okay.
And then it can like you can have like a little radio and like because it's usually like a circle, right? Uh-huh. Or like a triangle.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And then you can have like radios and antennas and stuff in the oh my
okay. Wow.
You're going to have to look up union logos after this.
Wow.
That's great. Nicely done.
So excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. Licensing fee. And this is from Don. As a technician for a cell phone carrier, I use my amateur license for disaster recovery because there may not be coverage in the area.
Sure.
And that's answering the question we had, you know, what do you use your ham radio for? Career-wise, is that something we asked?
I don't know.
I know that we've had that conversation multiple times because I think a key component to getting more young people involved in the hobby is actually connecting it to career prospects. So
yes.
they want to build the technical skill.
Correct.
So that's from Don KE5ADX.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Very good. Nicely done. Or good work, Don.
That was my last email.
Okay. Well, those were great.
Yeah.
Again, if you want
to reach getting out emails.
To Leia at leia@hamtactical.com for shirt ideas or comments on the podcast, particularly if you have something that I don't know. Leia loves
yes.
that.
Is there something you want me to spring on him during the podcast? Because he goes in blind. He sees none of these
yeah,
emails.
Yeah, I don't look at the email. I don't have access to the email box.
Yeah. Otherwise, again, iTunes.
Yeah, iTunes 5 stars. We love that. Thank
yes.
you so much.
Great comments.
iTunes. So iTunes does two things. One, it's really easy to leave a comment on iTunes. It's really
yes.
easy for us to pull them all up in mass. Because
yes.
other podcast systems are incredibly
yeah.
kludgy to do that.
Exactly.
And iTunes is the best ranking system for podcasts. So the
yeah.
more comments we get generally means it's the higher the podcast ranks.
And then more people get to listen to ham radio
yeah,
podcasts.
That, yeah. yeah. So yeah. there's a method to our madness, but we support we appreciate all the support. We truly do. So thank you, everybody.
Yeah, amazing. I like it. Actually, makes my week when we read the reviews.
Oh, that's awesome.
It does. It's actually probably one of the reasons that I'm so good at staying consistent, like doing the podcast.
Really?
With you. Yeah.
Ah, it's otherwise, that dopamine hit you've been.
Yeah.
You're chasing that dopamine.
I am chasing dopamine. Natural dopamine.
I mean, you gotta, I come home, you're smoking dopamine in the corner. The kids are like trying to get their schoolwork done. I'm like, what is going on in my home?
No. You know, like dopamine, encouraging foods. I think that the whole COVID thing has started to get me down, and then I have like a birthday coming and I'm getting a little sad about that. So I'm trying to proactively combat that by chasing dopamine through
and by chasing foods, you are doing things specifically like completing tasks and stuff, right?
Yeah, things that will
you need to
make
do,
me
you
happy
know you need to do, you know, for lots of reasons.
Well, that and stuff that I know is just like when I do it, it's gonna make me feel really good to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
get it off your list. Right. On
not just my checklist, but
yeah,
you know, like okay, fun stuff.
Well, what? Give me an example.
One
of it was, eat a whole pint of Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
No,
there's just so much dopamine.
I've actually been avoiding sugar because of
that's
the
awesome
dopamine.
That's really
situation.
Good.
Yeah, but going outside in the sun, planting a plant.
Okay.
Yeah, things like that. I'm growing mushrooms. So not like psychedelic mushrooms, lion's mane mushroom.
Again, what are we talking about? I don't know anything about mushrooms.
It's like meat.
It's like meat?
It's like when you cook it, it's like chicken. The texture is like chicken.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll give that a shot.
Oh, well, I didn't say you could have it.
Oh.
I didn't even offer. And you're just going to eat the mushroom. It's mushroom. Furry.
Oh, okay. I don't know if I'm... Never mind.
Make you eat it on an after chat.
Why is this mushroom furry? Okay, so that means if our email box is empty, it is time for Leia to continue her journey.
That's another reason I really like the emails and reviews.
Yeah. Through the technician test. So you are on test 2 since we started this podcast.
I'm on question 11 of 35.
Oh. And you actually went through a good amount.
Don't jinx me. Don't.
I'm saying you went through a good amount of questions last week.
Yeah, but I mean, don't jinx me on the
I'm
results.
Not saying anything.
Yeah.
I understand.
Okay, remember the last time was 21 out of 35.
21 out of 35. Yeah. We're not going all the way to 35 today.
No.
But we'll continue. We'll at least do 5.
For anybody who might be keeping track of, because I'm not keeping track of where I was
it's
last week.
It's an app that tracks your record and tests you've performed. The app has all the things. It's all built into the app.
Well, once you finish the test, not midway through the test.
No, I know, but your last test is tracked. You can, anyway, continue.
Okay. And I'm pretty far through my drink. I feel like maybe our format of drinking and then me getting into the test.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
So you needed to drink the cocktail before you started the test?
No, I think maybe it wasn't a good idea.
Oh, now don't.
Yeah, don't change it up now. Don't.
Come on.
Do you?
You got to finish that, by the way, because we have another beverage we need to open.
Can I drink during the test?
I mean, yeah, they don't know what's in your cup. They don't do like a test.
Mm. But what if I bring a drink?
Why does your drink have a garnish? Like, why is it in a tiki mug? I have questions.
It's just like clearly a michelada.
It's just a handle of vodka. It's a michelada cup. Yes. It's got chamoy just dripping off the side of it. You're like, what exactly is going on here? What?
That reminds me of the woman who said that her new mop fluid dispenser has everybody freaked out. And then she shows it and her mop fluid is coming out of a gas can.
Oh, yeah.
She's just pouring the mopping fluid.
Angrily dumping it all over the floor with clear liquid.
Containers.
Yeah.
They really make a difference.
they really send a message.
Okay. Which of the following is an appropriate receive filter bandwidth for minimizing noise and interference for SSB reception.
This is a tough one for you, but I mean, most okay, people, so this is a harder one.
My options are A, 500 hertz, B, 1,000 hertz, C, 2,400 hertz, or D, 5,000 hertz. I'm going to go with C, 2,400, just because 2.4 just seems to appear in so many places.
Okay.
And it's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, 2,400 hertz.
It's generally because of the size of your transmission for a single sideband is about 2,400 hertz.
Oh, because of voice.
Right.
So it's confusing to me why it's called single sideband.
I've explained this.
I know, but why not just call it voice? Why do we need...
Because you can do AM as voice. You can do FM as voice. Those are all...
I see.
Valid modes that are still in use today.
Okay, fair enough.
Single sideband is specifically a modified version of AM. Mm-hmm. Historically, AM came first.
Mm-hmm.
Then someone realized, well, why don't we just cut out the carrier and one of the sidebands of AM?
Right.
And put all the power from the radio just to transmit that sideband instead of the carrier and the two sidebands. Voila, you get a smaller bandwidth, meaning it's more efficient to transmit, and more power is going into that specific area of transmission. There you go, single sideband.
Yeah, so many acronyms still.
Single sideband. And I get it now. There's upper sideband and lower sideband.
And what's the difference between the two?
One is the left side, the lower frequency side, and the other is the upper frequency side of where the carrier would be if there was a carrier.
And why?
Good question. I believe that is an actual technician test question or a general test question.
Okay.
If you are 14 megahertz or higher, right? 14 megahertz is 20 meters.
Uh-huh.
That's the band. And if you go higher frequency...
That's the daytime.
Daytime. Yes, you're getting it.
I'm getting
it. If you go to the higher bands, higher means shorter meters, but higher frequency.
Okay.
So 10 meters, for instance, is 28 megahertz.
Okay.
Right? You use upper sideband on the higher frequency bands.
Okay.
If you're lower than 14 megahertz... like 10 megahertz, which is the 30 meter band.
Okay.
You use lower sideband.
So
that's the wrong. Okay. So I got to take that back. Hold
would
on.
40 30, meters 30. Be lower sideband?
Yes. So I should have used 40 meters.
Yeah.
40 meters is lower sideband. The reason why I shouldn't have said 30 is because 30 is CW only in digital.
Ugh.
And digital, you use upper
sideband. Keep it legal.
But,
okay.
Yeah, I know.
Keep
right.
It legal.
Keep it legal, buddy. For digital modes, you almost always use upper sideband, even if it's 40 meters or 80 meters.
Wait, what did whatever. You say?
For digital modes.
Oh.
Like FT8, JSA call, PSK31, you use upper sideband.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, let me throw this out here just to mess with your mind a little bit. This is all just an agreement we all have to do this. You can use lower sideband on the higher frequencies.
It's not a rule.
Not a rule.
It's just a gentleman's agreement.
Well, yeah, gentleman's agreement, kind of.
This is so much of ham radio is a gentleman's agreement.
There's no technical reason to use upper sideband in the higher bands and lower sideband on the lower bands. There's no requirement. That's just what we do.
It doesn't make it work better?
No. Nope.
What?
No.
This doesn't even make sense. Why arbitrary rules that are unspoken?
Well, so part of it is it's kind of frustrating. When you, and this has happened, I've been on 40 meters and there were a couple of hams that were talking specifically on upper sideband. And I tuned back and forth on them a couple of times and I went, what are these guys doing? So I switched it to upper sideband and there they were. If you try to listen to an upper sideband conversation while your radio is in lower sideband, it's jarbled. It's a mess. It sounds like human beings talking, but they're like they're speaking alien languages to each other. I could show you. We could go to one of the bands where people are talking prominently, and I could switch to the different sideband, and you can tell the difference. It's all kinds of funky.
Oh, so you do it just so that it's easier to make the contacts.
Yeah, you just do it. You just do that because that's where everybody's doing it over here this way and everybody's doing it over here that way. And you just do it because that's what the Romans are doing and that's how you make contacts.
But
it removes
how is
one
it,
extra step of
how
like,
is it a question on the test then?
It's just the suggestion. It's asking like, what is the suggested mode you use if you are on this frequency and you want to work single sideband?
I feel like ham radio is like a fraternity. And
well, I mean, we do all get drunk and go on the radio, so I guess that's probably true and for those that drink.
And you're just getting academically hazed.
Like, based on how much you know or how much you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit. It can sometimes feel that way.
It feels that way right now.
I mean, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to pull the curtain back to explain like the reality. Because I've had some serious conversations with people on like why things are this way. And when I say, as I'm saying to you, because they're like, well, I don't understand. Why? Because that's how we've always done it. And that's it. That's the answer. Because.
But I mean, the reality is that you could do it the other way, but you won't make contact. So what's the point of doing
well,
it that
you
way?
You can, but you'll probably just piss people off. Mm. So if you're on 14 megahertz and you're on lower sideband and you're calling CQ, someone may hop over there and be like, hey, buddy, what are you doing? You're pissing everybody off. Right?
This is why there are salty OMs. You
yeah.
realize that, right?
Yeah, that's
because
what
they do. They are the keeper of so much institutional knowledge
right.
in this situation.
And they share it by like being crass. By calling people out. That's how they share the information.
Well, that's how you show you're superior.
That's right. Yes. And it continues not just on the radio, to different pockets of the internet as well, where they hang out and be salty. So, you know.
Like, I totally get why that would be so off-putting. There are all these little nuances that if you don't know, somebody's going to be a jackass to you.
It can be a minefield. It can.
That's,
yeah. Ugh. And that's why we have our groups, you know, our Discord and stuff, where you can set up QSOs with people that are on our Discord that aren't going to be that way.
No wonder you need an Elmer.
Yeah, Elmers help a lot if you have them, yeah. Okay, one question in.
I've got to find myself an Elmer.
Yeah. Somebody knows what they're talking about. Yeah.
Which amateur band are you using when your station is transmitting on 146.52 megahertz?
We've definitely talked about that frequency before. What are the questions or the answers?
A is 2 meter band, B is 14 meter band, C is 6 meter band, and D is 20 meter band.
Oh, come on.
Is it 20 meters? Is it 20 meters?
What is the number
meters?
Again? What is the frequency?
2 meter. Dang it.
Oh,
I've just got a
146.520
yes.
is the 2 meter America's simplex contact. That's the calling.
I just need a chart. I just need to memorize a chart.
You can memorize a chart, but you can't have a chart when you take a test.
I know. Okay. All I need is a chart to memorize.
Right.
Because right now, to me, it's just a jumble of meters and megahertz.
Right. Right.
But if I had a chart that I could be like, I see it. I see how they relate. Mm-hmm. I could possibly find a pattern that would help me remember it.
Maybe.
You know?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. All right, then. Where is an RF preamplifier installed? Between okay. Between a transmitter and an antenna tuner. B, between the antenna and receiver. C, at a receiver's audio output. D, at the output of the transmitter's power amplifier.
I was literally just exchanging emails with George of the Ham Radio Workbench talking about preamplifiers, which we will mention.
Can I see your email?
Yeah,
really
no, you can't. And we will be talking about that later in this very show.
Okay, so a preamplifier.
Mm-hmm. What does an amplifier do?
It amplifies your signal.
Yes. It amplifies a signal.
Oh, is it amplifying the output or the input?
Yes. An amplifier. Yes.
It does both?
It can. But the question then has the word pre added to it.
Then between the transmitter and the antenna tuner? Between the antenna and the receiver.
Correct. It's a pre-amplifier, meaning before your radio has received the signal, your receiver, it is pre-amplifying the incoming RF.
Oh.
It is a pre-amplifier for the receiver.
I was thinking about that as an output.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's the trick.
Because that's what you talk about when you talk about amps outside of ham radio.
A linear amplifier is for the output. A pre-amplifier is for the input.
Okay.
And by the way, radios often will have a pre-amplifier in the radio. That you can turn on. But there are other amplifiers that go by the antenna source before the coax, or about where the coax is, for boosting the received signal coming in and then going into your radio for demodulation.
Okay.
Yeah.
I definitely should not have drank this cocktail.
What? Really? I don't think...
I don't think I'm gonna remember anything that saying right now.
I don't know that that's a cocktail. I think that's been a universal thing. You have remembered a lot.
I have.
You have.
But I know when something is like clicking for me, so that if it clicks, I'll remember it.
Mm-hmm. The little relay. You hear the little relay go click click, and then you're like, oh, memory is engaged.
But everything you just said right now.
No click.
No clicks.
No clicks.
It's more of a whoosh. Yes.
Okay.
And I think if I were more sober, it might have clicked.
Okay.
Yeah. And also that chart. I just can't.
We're not changing the format of the show.
All right. Okay. What is the basic unit of capacitance? A, the Henry. B, the volt. C, the ohm. D, the farad. The ohm. The farad. What is a farad?
I thought. Farad. 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 Picofarad. Microfarad.
I don't even know what those are.
They are for capacitors. Resistors are in ohms. Ohm.
Why are they called different things?
Because they measure, they're measurements of different things. Capacitance is not the same thing as resistance. Capacitance is the voltage that's stored in a capacitor.
Right.
A resistor is the resistance of the flow of electricity in ohms.
Why aren't they just called volts?
Well, there are volts involved, but you, depending on the circuitry you have and what you're trying to apply power to, you need to feed it the appropriate voltage with the appropriate resistance in ohms.
I've never even heard of a farad before.
Yeah, no. Yeah, aside I can't from, imagine you would stumble into that.
Aside from somebody I went to college with named Farad.
Are you the picofarad or the microfarad?
What is a picofarad and what is a microfarad?
It is a measurement of farads, farads.
Is it farads or farads?
I say picofarad, microfarad, but I'm assuming.
But what are they?
It is the measure of capacitance.
But what's the difference between the two? Why do you call one a
the
micro
number
and one?
It is like a exponential drop in size of capacitance.
Oh.
It is the amount of power the capacitor can store.
I've also never heard as pico as a prefix for size.
Oh, okay, okay. I'll give you the layperson's, like, what a capacitor
is. Thank you. Oh, my goodness.
So you know what a battery
Could
is, right?
You?
A battery stores power and doesn't let it go.
Yes.
Okay. A capacitor stores power, but only while it is under voltage. If you remove the voltage, the capacitors will kind of like drain, self-drain. Some don't. I appreciate that. I'm giving the very high level.
So it's like volt pressure?
No. Let me continue. The reason why you use a capacitor is if you want to smooth out the power supply. So if you have things down the pipe of the capacitor that you want to apply power to, and you want that power to be a constant voltage that doesn't change, mm-hmm. you use a capacitor in line so that the battery or whatever you're powering the thing with hits the capacitor, the capacitor tanks up, right? Mm-hmm. And it's holding a steady flow, the output. So the input could be chaotic, but the output is going to be a steady flow of voltage that doesn't dip.
Like a power bar? Like a power surge protector?
Power bars are delicious, but in this case,
no, it's too you know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
No, that's not doing the same
what
thing.
Do you call it if you don't call it a power bar?
Switch plug?
Oh,
surge
that's,
protector?
That's a good name for it.
Surge yeah. protector, generally? Surge protector?
Okay. So is it like a surge protector?
No, because it's not protecting against surges. It's taking the voltage that's coming in and smoothing it out so that there's no peaks and valleys, at least. I'm giving you the very layperson's. There's differences, of course, but depending on the type of capacitor you use. But that's its general function, is that you want to smooth out the power going into whatever the component is that's going to be energized.
So I'm trying to understand this. So on our garden hose, there is a thing that like lets off water when the hose is overloaded.
So that is for overpressure.
Okay.
Which I guess you could use a capacitor to do that. But you'd likely end up frying the capacitor if you fed it too much power.
Okay. All right. I got it.
Did you click?
I think I got it.
Did you hear a click?
I didn't little, hear it over a the little, mic. The, a the little earphone. Whoosh. A little whoosh. A very small click.
Little whooshy, little clicky.
Which of the following is good practice when installing ground wires on a tower for lightning protection?
Mm.
A, put a loop in the ground connection to prevent water damage to the ground system. B, all of these choices are correct. C, ensure that connections are short and direct. D, make sure that all bends in the ground wires are clean right angle bends. Ground wires have bends in them?
They can.
Mm. I'm going to say all of these are correct. No, ensure it's that the connections are short and direct.
So,
what is the lightning loop in a ground connection?
I don't know. Both of those are nothing. They're nothing to do with lightning. Lightning doesn't care if there's a loop. Right? Lightning doesn't care if there's bends. Lightning, okay.
It's going to take the shortest path.
Yeah. Okay, so you already get this.
We've
now,
talked about
before,
this.
Before we get any deeper in this, anything you talk about lightning or grounding systems, it drives a lot of disagreement. So I'm just going to go real simple again. Lightning takes the shortest path to ground. If you are grounding your antenna system, whether it's the tower or the antenna itself, mm-hmm. for lightning protection,
yes.
you want the path to ground to be as close to the antenna system as possible.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
If your like antenna is 100 feet away from your shack, mm-hmm. you want that ground to be as far away from the shack as possible. You want it to be as close to the antenna as possible, and you want that lightning to go straight down.
Gotcha.
Realistically, lightning is kind of like you know those champagne towers that they build with glasses?
I love those.
There may be one path of the champagne that's like more better for champagne to flow quicker.
More better.
But it's going to go everywhere still. You know, when you start pouring in the top and it just kind of overflows everywhere.
Yes.
Lightning's still going to go through your coax and probably obliterate some things in your shack, even if you have a very short path to ground. So.
All right.
Lightning is merciless, right? It's we have all these best practices, but lightning's pretty much going to wreck everything. So, you know,
there's no way to prevent that?
Yeah, unplug your stuff.
Huh.
Like, just unplug it. If you have lightning in your area,
there's not a device you can put between.
But the lightning will just blow up that device. Lightning don't care.
But then it'd be a sacrificial device.
Yeah, but it will short the device and then just blow right through into the next wire.
Oh, I guess it depends on the amount of voltage that the lightning's putting through the system.
Gigawatts, right? Did we learn anything from Back to the Future? Like so many watts, like
suddenly,
all the watts.
Suddenly, your IC7300 is in 1862.
Did we watch the same movie?
No.
Are you talking about Back to the Future 2? The worst of the Back to the Futures? Oh, no, 3. Sorry, 3.
I'm just not going to debate Back to the Future with you.
Yeah.
Your memory for movies is unparalleled, really.
It's pretty dumb.
Which of the following might damage a multimeter? A, attempting to measure voltage when using the resistance setting. B, not allowing it to warm up properly. C, leaving the meter in milliamps position overnight. D, measuring a voltage too small for the chosen scale. A, attempting to measure voltage when using the resistance setting. Your face is just, I should just not look at you. That is the correct answer.
Yes, and that is what my uncle did.
To my voltmeter.
He had it in resistance and he shoved it into the
That's
power
how I
mains.
Know the answer. God. But then your face made me you look so upset and disappointed that I was like, am I wrong?
I never
And
oh
then I
God.
Realized that you're just still upset and disappointed at your uncle.
That was like Ben's age. That's called what holding
you,
a grudge.
What were you even doing with a multimeter at Ben's age?
I used to do the circuit things like Ben did, but I did it with wire.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, that makes sense.
We didn't have snap circuits when I was a kid.
Man, would that have blown your mind?
In 1982, right? Back when you're taking batteries and bodging things together.
Okay. What is the term that describes a device's ability to amplify a signal? A, gain. B, on resistance. C, forward resistance. D, forward voltage drop. I have made a shirt about this topic.
So you just need to
it's
make...
It's a gain.
Yeah.
A, gain. Yeah.
So you just need to make a shirt for every one of these questions and then you'll remember it, no problem.
Solid.
All the clicks. I'll just hear clicks from the other room.
Just, you know,
so
400.
Many clicks, Farhad's going to be just, like, or Farad's going to be like, what was that?
Okay. I think I'm good. I've done actually quite a large number of questions.
You have.
This time.
Yeah. Okay. So you're not completely done with your cocktail, but this is the time where I wanted to open this bottle. So I'm going to open it. I'm still going to pour the glass
for
you.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Please read about the beverage.
I will. So I got a care package from Robert Nunez, KJ7OFA, sent a couple of really nice beers.
Thank you, Robert, for not sending only IPAs.
Yes, Leia was very enthusiastic about that.
I hate IPAs.
I like any kind of beer, pretty much. But this is from the Odin Brewing Company in Tukwila, Washington. I hope I pronounced that right. This is Odin's Gift, which is amber ale brewed with juniper berries.
I know. That's so exciting.
Little ginny
right.
Kind of red ale. Cool combo. So I'm going to thank you very much for that, Robert Nunez. I appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you. And I really like ambers. I like ambers. I yeah. like reds.
Stouts.
In addition to stouts and porters.
Yes.
Those are my beers of choice.
Out. It is a nice nice clear red.
Hey, do you remember when we used to drink hazy. Newcastle?
Remember that? You drank Newcastle a lot.
Newcastle was my favorite. Yeah. I used to get free pitchers at every Lakers game at the local sports bar.
When you were in college?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to let that sit for a second. So thank you, Robert. I appreciate it. So the next little news item that I wanted to mention outside of our normal format is I was a consultant on a TV show.
Very exciting.
Called Phantom Signals. It is dropping October 8th, and it is on Discovery Science.
It's 10 p.m. Pacific time.
Okay.
On October 8th. But I want to talk a little bit about the filming of this.
Okay, hold on. Let me get that, and then you can talk about it. So Phantom Signals is, I don't know how much I can mention, but there is a, I'll post the link in the description to the teaser. There's obviously some interesting visual things going on, but this is a show about frequencies that have existed, do exist, or interesting stories related to RF, things that are transmitted through the air that have left people wondering, how did that work? How did that happen? Why did that happen? So I'm not in all the segments of the show, but I'm in a good chunk of them.
Well, let's...
I don't know what's going to make it to the,
right,
to the end,
right,
at the end of the
day. You don't know what gets cut.
But I know what I shot. I know what I was involved in for the shooting.
And you don't know how crazy they're going to make you look.
Yeah, we have no idea.
Yes.
I could be the guy from Ancient Aliens in the future. We don't even know.
That's my fear.
For Ham Radio.
Thank goodness you didn't have COVID hair.
I didn't have really. COVID hair, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. So they reached out, Hugh, and they flew out because they're...
They flew out, right, yeah. From Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, Robert, this is really good. Oh, Ambers are usually on the sweet side. This has got a little bit of a bitter tone, but the bitter in a good way.
Oh, that's fantastic.
This is really good.
It's really clean.
Yeah, really clean, but I like that kind of... It's the juniper, right? It's very ginny type of... back end,
yes,
taste it.
Yes, good. It's got a bit of herbaceousness to it.
Yeah, good work, thank you.
So they flew out, and you had an original plan of how this is going to be shot.
Yes, this is going to be shot at a site that we went to, mm-hmm. outdoor site. All the segments were supposed to be done at this location.
Right, very outdoorsy.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, signal, like, what were you using, an RF finder?
Well, I can't really talk about all those details, but yeah, it was outside. It was, the idea was that we were replicating one of these things.
Right. Well, I can reference the RF finder, your pictures in the press release.
Yes.
Using the RF
I'm using a handheld Yagi antenna, and I'm obviously holding a radio, and I'm not pointing it at the sky, so
right.
One would assume that I'm pointing it at the something
source.
On the ground,
right?
Looking for something, sure.
But then it rained.
Then it rained,
and you were about 2 hours away from the house, and you said, "We need to film in the shack."
Yes.
And for those who don't know, the shack is in our garage.
Most of it, yeah.
Which, I mean, you kind of have two shacks.
Yeah, yeah.
But the one that is the quintessential ham shack right. look is in the garage.
The shack you're thinking of is, right, part of the garage.
And at that time, the garage was a hot mess.
A hot mess.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
I think, like, we were in the middle of projects, and we had a bunch of things that needed to be, like, put away.
Yeah, we were in the middle of doing something. I don't remember what it was.
I cleaned that garage in 2 hours by myself.
When I opened the garage, I was like, oh, this is going to be bad. We're all going to have to clean up stuff really fast to make this work. We opened the garage, and it was like a different room. Like, I didn't even know. I was losing my mind. I'm like, what, did she just dump everything? I didn't even see the trash bin. That must have been huge. It was insane. But yeah, she...
I was anger cleaning. I was so upset.
You were not happy. You were very not happy.
Because we had the conversation.
We did.
That you should have cleaned the garage mm-hmm. before you went to shoot, just in case they wanted to shoot in the shack.
I distinctly remember this conversation.
And
you never let me forget it.
And it didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
And it was me. It was me. And now I'm salty. So.
Salty all over again. I've resalted myself. But you did a fantastic job. And that allowed us to do the interview portions of the whole thing.
Yes, and then they needed additional footage, in the past couple of months, they needed it.
Well, so COVID happened,
right?
and the things that they were planning on doing together couldn't happen.
Right.
So I got brought back in for another segment.
Mm.
And so that's where I got brought in, brought back. So I'm in for more segments now. At least that's the idea. I don't know how the...
Let's see how it turns out.
I shot all the video for that stuff.
Yeah, how much of it is usable?
Oh, I don't even know because... I make YouTube videos. So I look at the camera. I do lots of me not in the shot, just showing the thing. But that's not what TV does.
Right. Well,
that
also,
is not TV.
When they came to shoot, it was a crew. It was like four guys.
Yeah.
They did the lighting. They did everything. Mm-hmm. And you don't have that equipment, nor mm-hmm. do you have
I have since bought more lighting. And that has shown in my videos. They've gotten way better. And it was all lighting.
Yes.
But my camera is a pale comparison of what they use. I use a Sony a6400, which shoots in 4K. Mm-hmm. It is a nice camera. It is a not cheap camera.
Right.
But... that's me looking at it.
Right.
They're a production crew. They're using full Blackmagic gear. Like, all their stuff is probably 10K and up.
Sure.
I'm guessing. Just a shot in the dark. Don't know. So, pales in comparison. And the guy that was the camera operator,
yeah,
that dude was out of control. Like, I would just like to follow that guy around and see what he's doing to set up shots. It was awesome watching him work. Everybody in the crew was super cool. The shooting was so much fun. It was just a blast. Now, they did have me do like a lot of takes of something.
Mm-hmm. Did they make you put on a brown suit?
A brown suit?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
The guy from Ancient Aliens, he's wearing a crazy brown suit.
No.
Made you talk with your hands a lot.
When we were doing the outdoor scenes, we reshot a lot. They had a drone, they had some other stuff. Like, it is a thing. And they kept asking me, like, you okay? You want to keep going? It's all right? I'm like, yeah, let's just keep going until we're done. Just keep going.
Yeah.
And when they got done, they're like, yeah, man, good work. We really kept asking you to shoot this stuff over and over again. I'm like, I don't care. I'm here. I planned the whole day here. So let's just do it. So I'm like walking up and down the mountain over and over again, just back and forth. It was crazy. It was great. It all worked out great. At least I think it worked out fine. We will see. Now, for those,
I want to do like a Zoom viewing party for it, like just invite, you know, whoever, we'll do a Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm almost embarrassed because I don't know how it might turn out. What if you get like the Real Housewives treatment, just making you look as crazy as possible?
I don't even know. I don't think they would do that, but. Who knows? Who knows?
You're supposed to be the science guy, though.
I'm supposed to be the straight man. I'll just throw that out there.
Right.
I'm supposed to be the straight man.
You're not making up RF stories going,
nope.
Yes, this
I'm
is
not...
unexplained phenomena. You're like, no, I'm going to explain this.
Yeah. So there are definite, like, you know what? We should probably table this until the show comes out. And
yeah,
then we
let's
can
do that.
An episode where we cover.
No like, spoilers.
No spoilers.
Yeah.
But here's the. Well, yeah, once it comes out, we can talk about whatever. I'll say this. For those of you that don't have Discovery Science, they have an app. The app is free. And a lot of the content on the app is free.
Oh.
So I don't know if those episodes will be free, but with ads on them. I don't know. I don't know if you have to pay for the episodes. You and I, dear podcast listener, are going through it the same way because I don't have cable. I don't have anything. So if you don't have Discovery Science... I downloaded the app. I don't know if I'm going to have to pay to watch.
To watch yourself.
To watch myself. But, you know, when I find out more, I'll let everyone know.
Excellent.
Okay. Very good.
Though I do want to note, one of my favorite science series is actually on Discovery Science Channel on YouTube, How It's Made.
Yes.
Yeah. That is
so. How It's Made used to be on Discovery proper, I believe.
Right.
And then when they spawned off Discovery Science, the How It's Made episodes ended up there. Right. And guess what?
What?
The How It's Made episodes is on the Discovery Science app. It's the first thing I saw. It's the first thing I clicked on, and you can watch a lot of the episodes.
Yes.
I was like, yes. That was the That was like the Bob Ross of science, like of not science, but like the soothing thing that you play in the background, how it's made. The narrator had a real, you know, smooth, you know, voice. And so you just put that on.
I'm pretty sure all of those videos that are about how, like, such a satisfying video, it's just clips of how it's made.
Yeah. It's just peanut butter. Putting into a peanut butter jar. Or how they meant, like, bend chain.
Yeah.
The chain linking machine.
Mm-hmm.
Super satisfying.
Or how they make Hershey's Kisses.
That just looks like poop.
It makes a pucking sound. It makes a kissing sound.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay. So what are we talking about today? So today we're going to be talking about ham radio antennas, specifically, though, for satellite communications. With the acquisition of the IC705, I have kind of redoubled my efforts a bit in satellite comms.
Oh, that was you yesterday going, there's a satellite pass.
Yeah, and I ran back to the...
You booked it outside or to the
Amtrak? No, so we'll talk about that.
You booked it to the Amtrak.
So there's a couple of ways to look at this. And there's like entry-level satellite stuff, and then there's like stepping it up, you know, into the more expensive land. Mm-hmm. We're going to cover a little bit about all of that right now. So satellites, and we're going to talk about the FM satellites first. Okay, so I've mentioned in the past on the show, on the YouTube channel, that the FM satellites are cross-band FM repeaters.
Yes.
So the uplink is going to be with a frequency that's either going to be VHF or UHF, and the downlink is going to be the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So if the uplink is on 2 meters,
mm-hmm.
say like 14 whatever, 144 dot something something, the downlink is going to be on 70 centimeters. So 4 or 5 blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
4 or 5 6 dot blah, blah, blah. So what that means is you can hook up an antenna, dual band antenna, meaning you have to have dual bands, right? You got to have the capability to transmit and receive VHF and UHF. You can go outside and you can aim it at the pass as it's going overhead.
Mm.
And there's all kinds of apps that do it. The one that I use is GoSat Watch on the iOS. I'm looking at it right now. GoSat Watch. All one word. And that'll notify you when a pass is coming, right? Now, the important thing to understand, though, is when you normally talk to, if I was just talking to you and you had a radio,
mm-hmm.
and you just, you know, went down the street and we're just chatting,
mm-hmm.
that's simplex comms.
Right.
We're on the same frequency.
Mm-hmm.
If you are holding down the PTT button at the same time I'm holding down the PTT button,
yes,
we're just talking at each other. Nobody's hearing anything.
Right.
The satellites, though, are crossband, and they're duplex. Okay? You're transmitting up on 2 meters, using that as an example. It could be 70 centimeters, but for this example, use 2 meters. We're transmitting into the satellite at 2 meters. And we could, if we were so inclined, have a second radio on 70 centimeters on the downlink frequency.
Hmm.
So you can listen.
You're having a simultaneous.
You can hear yourself on the downlink.
Oh.
So you know you're hitting the satellite.
Interesting.
So what you do is you have a headset that is on the receiver, the mm-hmm. receiving radio, receiving antenna. So this could be a Baofeng.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You connect that into your ears. And you listen to the downlink coming off the satellite. And so what it allows you to do is, when you got your antenna out there and you're pointing it around and you're talking into your transmitter, if you're not hearing yourself, then you're not making the satellite. That's the first thing it tells you.
Huh.
Second thing is, if somebody's having a QSO already and they break because they're waiting for the next person to call back, and you call and mm-hmm. you hear them come back and they're not, you're talking. And you're listening on the downlink, and you mm-hmm. hear them come back to somebody else, you can let go immediately and stop.
Oh.
Because the satellites have a very limited pass time.
Right.
Satellites are, they're low Earth orbit satellites. So at best, they're going to be somewhere between like 9 minutes mm-hmm. to 11 minutes, call it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes less. Now, the path that it takes over your home is mm-hmm. going to vary.
Right.
In some cases, the satellite will barely crest the horizon far off to the west or far off to the east.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to like aim out towards the horizon and track. I'm using my hands right now for my wife.
Right.
I'm tracking from the south up to the north, basically, right?
Right.
But sometimes they'll come right overhead. And so then you got to take your antenna and you're holding it, right? Mm-hmm. And you're swinging it up north and spinning around and going around the other side.
Yeah, people aren't going to think you're weird at all.
Oh, I've definitely done this in the front yard. And, you know, this was back before I had an antenna on the roof. So they were probably thinking to themselves, do you remember that cute little man who stood in his front yard just waving around a metal Christmas tree? And then he put this nasty antenna on his roof. What happened? Okay, so that's handheld, right? That's like handheld satellite comms. Mm-hmm. Now, we've already stepped this up to like a complicated level. I want to go back one step for everybody that's listening going, I ain't going to go buy no crazy handheld antenna and swing it around like an idiot. You can do satellite comms with an HT, a handheld.
Mm-hmm.
The difference, though, remember how vertical antennas work?
Mm-hmm.
Vertical antennas have the radiating element that points vertically perpendicular to the ground.
Right.
The null point is on the tip.
Like an abri,
but the null point is on the tip.
Right.
You can't point the vertical antenna at the satellite.
Right.
So what do? You turn it on its side. So the broad side of the vertical points at the satellite.
Oh.
And you can take the broad side of the vertical and track the satellite.
Interesting.
And talk into your HT and make a contact. Now, that requires a HT that can transmit on VHF and listen to 70 centimeters when you let go.
Huh.
So you've got a split, okay? But by the way, a Baofeng can do that. So that's not that big a deal.
Are there a lot of people trying to access the satellite pass? Because you're saying it's
so,
only 9 to 11 minutes. How many, so people, many people are trying to access at the
so
same time?
So many people.
How are you even getting through?
No, you got to have a good system. And that's where we're going with this conversation. Buckle up, Leia.
Hang on to my hat.
So you can do this with a Baofeng. There's plenty of videos on YouTube of people working satellite comms with like a Baofeng, just with the stock antenna, just boom, there you go.
Okay. Really?
Yeah, yeah, super cool, super, super cool. Now, before I start going down the road that I'm going to go on, I'm going to mention something. Now, you mentioned, you know, why is this important? Is there a lot of people that are on the satellites?
Mm-hmm.
There are, and the reason is satellite propagation allows you with your handy talkie to reach people in other states away. That's
right.
How far.
Right, right.
So you take a radio that normally only allows you to do a couple miles,
mm-hmm.
and you're now talking to somebody potentially in another state.
Right, because you're on a super repeater.
No, it's not a super repeater. It's a low-powered repeater. It's just way up there.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like,
well, in that sense, it's a super repeater, I guess. But if the satellite is between you and the station you want to talk to, that's who you're going to make contact with.
Yeah.
So if the satellite's over Arizona, mm-hmm. from here or whatever, and that station is in Texas, well, you're making a contact at Texas, right? There's people who've worked all states, worked a contact in every state in the continental U.S. via satellites.
Wow.
Now, I don't think...
What do they call that?
Worked all states. What do you mean? It's worked all states, 2 meters, 70 centimeters, or satellite.
Wow.
There's an award for that. But now keep in mind, it's probably not California to Maine, right? We're not doing that. That's probably...
You're saying they're like in the middle of the country?
Yeah, or they move around or whatever, right?
Okay.
Okay. So here's the thing I want to... This is to entice you, okay? You ready for this? There is a event that goes around satellite comms.
I do like events.
It's called Wumploda.
Wumploda.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay, that's on the air.
That's
let me guess. What is Wumploda? Is
you
it W-M?
Never, yes. Maybe you'll guess it. Maybe.
P-L... OTA?
Yes. Unless you
world?
Unless you have heard me say this acronym, you are never going to guess it.
World map.
No, neither one. You're never going to guess it.
Okay, good. Just tell me what it is.
Walmart.
Parking lots. I do. Yes.
On the air.
Yes, I have heard of Wumploda.
Walmart parking lots on the air.
Yes.
And they haven't done it in a while. I hope they bring it back. But when they were doing it, it was really fun to watch. And I really wasn't into satellites, but I was just loving every little bit of it because it was just so funny.
I have seen many a picture of Walmarts, actually.
So what happened was the there's another thing that satellite contact people do, is they try to get grid squares. Do you remember when I explained grid squares, that they took the entire globe and they gridded it out and they gave it an identifier? Satellites are really good at doing grid square chase. And it just so happens, for some really weird reasons, that Walmart's border grid squares.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Many, many Walmarts are built like bordering a grid square. I'm assuming it's largely because like main thoroughfares or something like that, and the parking lots are big, and it just kind of works out that way. But people will go and they'll get on the border of two grids. And so when you make a contact with that person over satellite, you're getting the two grids.
Huh.
So there's a whole complicated system that goes into satellite comms. It's an extremely fun, extremely fast-paced aspect of the hobby. But this Wumploda thing really took off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they had achievements. Okay? Achievements.
I love achievements.
I'm not gonna bring them up and read them, except for the one that I know by heart, because, well, there's actually a couple. If you make a contact while in a cart,
okay,
you get like extra points for the weekend that they're doing, the Wumploda weekend, right?
Okay.
I think if you got a picture with the Walmart security, like holding your antenna or something like that, that was worth extra points. And they were like posting it to the Twitter page to get points and stuff like that.
That's amazing.
But there was one called the MacGyver.
I also love MacGyver.
The MacGyver was, you could start with a couple of hand tools, a piece of coax that you brought, and your radio. You had to source all the parts for your antenna in the Walmart.
So you're getting a tape measure?
No.
Oh.
You want to know what people used?
No. Let me guess. Okay. Let me guess. Broomsticks?
Broomstick would probably work.
Okay. Okay. Fishing poles.
Maybe. There's an even easier one than this, by the way. So much easier.
Curtain rod.
Nope. Too hard. Everything you said right now is too hard. You don't need it to be that hard.
It needs to be soft metal?
Rigid, yet something that you could easily assemble an antenna from.
Rigid, but you could assemble an antenna from.
You want me to just tell you?
Yes.
Pool noodle.
What?
Pool noodle.
It doesn't have to be metal?
No. The elements need to be metal.
Oh.
The boom, that piece, the centerpiece is called the boom.
Okay.
That needs to be technically not metal. In a lot of cases, you don't need to use metal at all. In fact, in a lot of ways, it's just easier not dealing with it. So yeah, you use like wire coat hanger. Just cut the wire coat hanger to the size of the elements you want to use. Jam that sucker through the pool noodle. Hook it up to the coax. Go nuts.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Super cool. Super, super cool.
Ingenious.
Mm-hmm.
Easily cut as well.
What?
Pool noodles.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't have to cut it. Just jam the ends through there and go to town. Huh. Okay. So those are all FM satellites. FM satellites are easy to get started with. If you're thinking about this, people that are listening, the two brands that are the best, well, not best, but the easiest ones to get are Arrow Antennas sells a dual band Yagi antenna. You need a dual band antenna because you need to have something on 2 meter and you need to have something on 70 centimeter.
Mm-hmm.
There's another maker of antennas that's called Elk Antennas. And that antenna is called a log periodic antenna. You haven't got to the questions on log periodic antennas yet. I think it's in the technicians. I'm sure it's in the general, though. A log periodic is like a stepped element antenna, where the elements start long and then they get like narrow as you go.
Mm-hmm.
The log periodic is multi-banded as well, so it allows you to do 2 meters and 70 centimeters. But these are all handheld antennas. You can take them out, point them at the sky, you know, point them around, all that stuff. Now, If you want to do this at home, you can get started with a Yagi, like an arrow, or you can mm-hmm. build one out of measuring tape. Mm-hmm. The only problem is you need to have dual band. It needs to be 70 centimeters and 2 meters. You can't just cut one antenna and be like, hey, I'm good. Let's make some contacts. Mm-hmm. What you can do, though, is you can have two antennas. You can have one Yagi that's for 70 centimeters and one Yagi that's for 2 meters.
That's the solution I would take.
Well, yeah, because then you just have somebody else help you. Mm-hmm. You can do it with your friends. You know, I'll get drunk, build some tape measure right. antennas and
my Cerritos ham friends.
Right.
Is this why you want me to get licensed so badly? So I can be here.
You just get drunk and make tape measure antennas? That's right. Now, so you just use two Baofengs for that. Simple. Mm-hmm. If, however, you want to get more complicated, so you got yourself a dual band arrow antenna, and this is the antenna I happen to have. They have something called a duplexer built in. A duplexer takes the two feed points of the two antennas, the 2 meter antenna and the 70 centimeter antenna, and they run it into one coax cable out. Mm-hmm. So this is, we haven't got into this whole world yet. We will. The antenna knows, it doesn't know, but it just, this is how it works out. If your radio transmits on 2 meters, your RF will go down the 2 meter antenna. And it won't go down the 70 centimeter antenna.
How do it know?
It's like ohms, right? Ohms.
Okay.
No. Don't worry about it.
And
farads. There's no resonance. There's too much. So your SWR is too high on the 70 centimeter. Mm-hmm. So it's just like it's resisting the RF going down. Again, super layperson's attempt at explaining that. So all your RF goes down the 2 meter, and you're out the door. There are handheld antenna radios that will work dual, dual simplex, full duplex. That's what I'm thinking about. It will, with earplugs in, earbuds in your mm-hmm. ears, connected to the radio will be constantly receiving the downlink, and you can transmit into the handy talkie while listening to the downlink at the same time.
Huh.
There's only a couple of radios that do this. And one of them is the Chinese radio, the Wushan. I don't know the model number, but it's just look it up, full duplex Wushan radio. The other one is a radio that's no longer being sold anymore, but it recently went out of production.
Why? Why did it go out of production?
Because they made a new version, but the new version doesn't have the capability to do full duplex.
I hate it when they make new versions of things and then they do away with capabilities from the previous version.
It's a really interesting discussion in its own right, but that radio, the radio I have, which does full duplex, is the Kenwood D72A. Really good radio.
But it's just like, why would you discontinue making a radio that has more capabilities if the radio you're replacing with it doesn't have the capability?
I'll take a little off-road on this one. What I think, this is just me talking, this mm-hmm. is just my thoughts.
Sure.
The full duplex capability is really, really only attractive to people that are into satellite comms.
Okay.
I don't think that that's necessarily a large enough sub-market within amateur radio mm-hmm. that it drew people to that radio versus another radio.
You know what the solution to that is?
Well, hold on, let me finish. What I think happened was they took out the components that allowed the full duplex capability mm-hmm. and they put in the digital mode that replaced that, what I think is what happened. The D72 does not do digital. It's analog only. The D74, which replaced it, has D-Star in it, mm-hmm. which is a digital mode. Requires different circuitry. It's a different board setup. The whole thing's different.
Sure.
At least certain components are different. Again, somebody's going to check me and they're going to email you with the details yes. on it. But check I think that's it. What happened. I think that they looked at the market for the radio and they're like, well, what's going to have more people interested in the radio? And I think they said, is it the full duplex? No, probably not. It's going to be the D-Star.
And but so they went why the not D-Star. Just produce both?
Well, they did. They produced the D-72 like,
doesn't
for a long time.
Make a bunch of different, very similar
Not anymore. They've cut back, but they used to. They used to for a long time. The D-72 used to be in production for a really long time. They only recently discontinued it. The D-74 has been out for a while. So I don't think that they're like, I think they were just kind of moving on. I don't know.
They weren't doing the Apple mode of, all right, now we've got a new iPhone. 6 months later, yeet. Buy old iPhone.
yeet old iPhone, buy new iPhone. So that kind of covers the FM satellites a bit. Obviously, I didn't go into a lot of detail on everything. There's way better data out there from people that are much bigger experts than I am. I will leave it with this one comment in that if you are going to get into this and you're going to be active in it, consider getting an inline audio recorder. You want to record the audio that your radio is receiving before it goes into your ears, right? You want to hear it. You want to hear the radio, mm-hmm. but you also want to record that audio because you don't have time to log your contacts. It's too fast. There's too many people.
Mm.
And it's only 9 minutes. So you just turn the recorder on when the pass is about to start. You do the whole thing. You make as many contacts as you can. And then you just handle the logging after
How
the fact.
Many contacts can you make?
I mean, there's people out there that make like a minutes. Ton. I don't
What's
know,
a ton?
I don't know. A lot. I'm assuming over 10, 20. Easy, I'm assuming.
Okay.
But it's a thing. I'm not an expert in it. I should have... Actually, I think I know a couple of experts I can have on the show. I might do that. That'd be a lot of fun. Well, so let me draw this all back to my current thing that I'm working on, or thinking about, I should say, thinking about. Mm-hmm. So we were just talking about swinging, going outside and swinging the antenna around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wouldn't it be amazing if they came up with something that just did it all that for you?
Of course.
They do. Of course they do. They make antenna systems that will auto-rotate and pivot
mm-hmm.
the antenna. You hook it to a computer and it does all the work.
That makes sense.
So I'm looking at antennas... I haven't decided one way or the other. If
you
I
don't need
go.
Another antenna, well, it sounds like you can just do it with a Baofeng.
Yeah, but I
mean,
can't
that's
do
what you said. So
I can't do satellite We're fine. With. The,
I mean,
with
you
the
did
antennas.
It with a Baofeng. So there are people who do it with a Baofeng. You said,
yeah, but if it's
in
the
like
roof,
a Walmart parking lot,
if it's
lot.
On the roof, then it
so
doesn't
think,
block the RF.
I think you should do that. I think you should go to a Walmart parking lot with some Baofengs and not
around,
get another radio
swing
or
the
antenna. Or really, you don't need any more equipment. Is where I'm going with this because it is as easy as you described it with a Baofeng.
I don't think that's true.
Then why did you say that?
It's easier.
Suddenly, when it applies to you, it's not true.
Well, okay. So you gotta remember that if the computer is doing all the work for you, it's tracking it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
It's doing all the adjustment and moving. You're in constant connection to the satellite. Because what the computer also does is Doppler shift.
How many satellite passes... are there in a year?
What do you mean? In a week? In a day? They're constant.
Oh, no. This is your new rabbit hole.
So here's one of the antennas I'm looking at. I need a big picture of this.
This sounds terrible.
This one doesn't rotate, though.
Why are you going to put another antenna up?
That one's not bad, right?
It's terrible. They're all terrible.
I'm showing her an egg beater antenna.
That's terrible.
Now, I've been giving like real high level stuff. I haven't dove in on any of this like details, but satellites, you remember we talked about vertically and horizontally polarized?
Mm-hmm.
Satellites can spin. A lot of them are just spinning around.
Mm-hmm.
So you need something that's helically polarized.
Wow.
So that antenna I showed you is called an egg beater. It's mm-hmm. got the little loops on the side.
Mm-hmm.
That means that it can receive no matter the orientation of the thing that's
amazing,
right?
It seems like the Step IR, for as expensive as it was, should also be.
These are really good questions you're asking. The Step IR is only for HF. What have we already talked about? HF can't pierce the atmosphere.
Yes. Yeah.
So
we did talk about that.
What? We need to talk about HF, not piercing the atmosphere?
I said we did talk about that.
We did.
Yeah.
VHF, UHF pierces the atmosphere. That's why it's used for satellites.
I don't like this podcast anymore.
So anyway, I'm thinking about it. At the very least, let me tell you what I've done. I do have the 705.
At the very least, let me tell you what I've done. I ordered it.
You're welcome. I have hooked the 705 to the computer, and it's auto-tracking the Doppler shift, because I didn't get into Doppler shift. Would you like to hear about Doppler shift?
Not if it's a part of you buying another antenna. Okay. Let's do that then.
Okay. So have you ever been...
Have you ever?
So you've been standing outside, right? You've been standing outside one time, mm-hmm. and you hear a police siren way down the road.
I was standing outside today and heard a police siren.
But on a road that's going to pass you?
Not today, but yes, I know what you're saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that siren at the distance away, when it's far away, mm-hmm. when it gets to your ears, is a different frequency than when it's closest to you.
Hmm.
And then also going away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does that mean? That means that when the satellite is passing overhead, mm-hmm. the satellite's frequencies are always the same. It's always transmitting on the same frequency and always receiving on the same frequency. The FM satellites, again, we're talking about this, the easier satellites to operate. There's a whole other set of satellites called linear satellites that we're not going to get into today.
Mm.
The FM satellites are affected by Doppler shift because our Earth is not flat.
Contrary to many people's beliefs.
Yes. When you're standing where you are, and you're looking at your little phone app, and it says the satellite's going to rise south-southeast.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've pointed your antenna south-southeast.
Okay.
You know what the transmit frequency and the receive frequency is of that satellite. Well, when it's coming up over the horizon, it's at the farthest point that it will be until it goes to the other horizon on the other side of the pass.
Okay.
You have to shift down the frequency on the receive side to match the Doppler shift that is occurring because the satellite is so far away.
And how do you know what that is?
There's a couple of ways to do that. You can program multiple channels into your radio, starting at the pass begin all the way to the highest point of the pass, which is, oh God, the azimuth? No, it's the, let me think about it. I should know this. There's no reason I shouldn't know this. There's a term for when, there's a term when a satellite's at its apogee. There we go.
Mm.
The apogee of its pass. The highest point of when it's going, like, overhead from you.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess that's not really true. Anyway, I'm making this too complicated. When it's coming up over the horizon is the furthest it will be from you. Mm-hmm. So you have to adjust Doppler. And so you adjust Doppler, you adjust Doppler, you adjust Doppler until it's right overhead. And when it's right overhead or closest to you overhead,
mm-hmm.
that's when it's going to be on that frequency that is the frequency that's listed on the websites and all
gotcha.
That.
Gotcha.
And then as it starts to go away from
you. How much do you program like the different frequencies? You're mm-hmm. saying you pre-program. But how do you know how much to pre-program the frequency spaces by?
It depends on if the uplink is 2 meters or 70 centimeters. Or
okay.
I'm sorry, the downlink. I don't remember those numbers off the top of my head, but you can look it up online for Doppler shift for programming
oh, okay.
your radio.
Gotcha.
And you just program it into your radio. So you have like, so one of the names of the satellites is like AO91, AO92. And you just have like AO92 normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have AO92 plus one, AO92 plus two,
mm-hmm.
and then AO92 minus one, AO92 minus two. And that's not, one and two doesn't mean like 1 megahertz. It's just a reference point for when the pass is starting, you should be on plus two. And then as it gets closer, you go to plus one. And then when it's overhead, you go to zero or normal. And then you start to back it off as it goes away.
Okay.
So if you were to draw this out on a piece of paper, if you took a big circle, right,
mm-hmm.
and you put yourself on the, you know, then you drew another bigger circle around
that. Is
that
a circle or is it an ellipse?
What? What do you mean?
Like if you're mapping the past, is it a circle or is it an ellipse?
In this case, low Earth orbit is a circle.
Okay.
There are other past, like other satellite orbits that they go in, but in this case, the low Earth orbit is just, let's just call it a circle.
Okay.
So if you draw a larger circle for the past and then a smaller circle inside that for the Earth, and you put yourself on it, and if you draw kind of a line where the horizon line is perpendicular mm-hmm. to you and where it intersects with that satellite, mm-hmm. right, at the low point and the high point, and you did a measurement between the high point of the past right above your head and then where the beginning and the end is, you'll realize that, hey, the distances are different. So that's why we have to adjust for Doppler.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Are there flat Earth hams?
I don't know.
I don't know how that would be possible, given the amount of science you need to understand.
Well, I mean, the way I look at flat Earth hams, I mean, if they do exist, couldn't I hypothetically, just in most cases, couldn't I just have a tower that's like 100 feet up, and then have my antenna on that, and then shouldn't my antenna for VHF, UHF, just be able to go like hundreds of miles if you had a pretty much straight shot?
Right.
Like a lot of the flyover states.
Yeah.
Like that's just flat land.
Yeah.
I should be able to go like halfway across the country.
You should be able to see Russia from your house.
If I put like enough power behind the antenna, I should just be able to like beam that sucker way, way far away. Mm-hmm. Right. There's nothing stopping it.
Right.
Right. The only thing that stops it is it's just the.
There's a curve to the Earth.
There's a curve. And then your RF just goes out into space. Like that's right. What happens, right? Yeah. And at certain points, it's attenuated by the atmosphere and all that good stuff. But yeah, largely that's what happens. So yeah, that's my new thing I'm looking into.
Mm.
I haven't bought anything. Don't worry, honey.
Mm hmm. Mm hmm.
Just thinking about it. Just thinking about it.
I did it.
Oh, so yeah, the reason I was talking to George is he was like, oh, that egg beater antenna is pretty good for satellites. No gain. You know, we love gain.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, if you do go that route, make sure you get the preamp on that antenna. It'll help you pick up more of the satellites.
I see.
And I said, thank you, George.
Thanks, George.
Of the Ham Radio Workbench, another great podcast.
Thanks so much, George, for suggesting more equipment. Thank you.
Yes. Well, I think that's going to do it. We did go long. This is another hour and 40-something minute podcast.
Oh, my goodness. That's too long.
It's late, and I need to go to bed.
Same.
So we will bid you all a 73.
73.
Thanks for listening.